agenda paper 10 and handing over to Satanique again.
We'll publish the tentative agenda decision on the presentation of liabilities or assets related to uncertain tax treatments. In that tentative agenda decision, the committee concluded that an entity is required to present uncertain tax liabilities as current or deferred tax liabilities and uncertain tax assets as current or deferred tax assets. We received 10 comment letters. 6 respondents agreed with the committee's decision, and 4 raised concerns about aspects of the committee's technical analysis. Paragraphs 14 to 41 discuss respondents' comments together with our analysis. Based on our analysis, we recommend finalising the agenda decision with no changes. Appendix A sets out the proposed wording of the agenda decision, and I would like to ask whether you agree with our recommendation.
I do not agree. For a couple of reasons. One is there is diversity in practice, so I don't think the standards are clear. If we do finalize the agenda decision as worded, I think we're effectively setting standards without having gone through the process. So that's a concern we put in the comment letter, and I will reiterate that here. Second of all, I don't agree with the technical analysis. I think uncertain tax positions are not tax payables or receivables, primarily due to the uncertainty. I think IFRIC 23 addresses the recognition and measurement, not the presentation. So when you refer to IAS 1, I don't think it's clear that it should be part of a tax payable receivable line. Besides, I don't believe that gives the right presentation in terms of what the nature of the item is because of the uncertainty related to it.
Okay, thanks, Bonnie. Bruce?
Thanks. With respect to my learned colleague, I actually agree with the agenda decision. As we said in the last meeting, I've always seen the IFRIC as an interpretation of IAS 12, and to me, this is just commenting on the measurement of the tax that's there. Once you're just saying that this is just a measurement issue around what's in IAS 12, to me, everything has to flow from where we report it and how we do under IAS 12. So I would support the agenda decision as been done.
Paul?
I was also here during the development of FRIC 23, and it seems to me it's clearly an unintended consequence. Therefore, I do not support this agenda decision, and I would prefer to address through this than the setting process.
John?
So no surprise, I totally agree with Bonnie's comments. I totally disagree with Bruce's comments.
My island just got bigger.
I think, as I've already said, I think that the standards are not clear enough. I think that we can enter into details, but there are numerous in the agenda papers. In the agenda paper, there are numerous paragraphs whereby you're not demonstrating anything. You're deriving a conclusion without having made a proper demonstration. Paragraph 21B, paragraph 31. You do not answer in paragraph 31 to the concerns that were raised in some comment letters. Paragraph 37, so you do not demonstrate, you're just stating. And you're stating a view just to derive from these statements a conclusion. I still think that the standards are not clear enough. If you read again paragraph 5 of IS 37, when another standard deals with a specific type of provision, contingent liability or contingent asset, an entity applies that standard, so the standard in which it is referred to, instead of this standard, i.e. instead of IS 37. For example, some types of provisions are addressed in standard and paragraph B, income taxes, see IS 12, income taxes. So IS 37 is explicitly stating the fact that there might be provisions that relate to income taxes. In IS-12, it was pretty clear from the analysis that IS-12 and IFRIC 23 are totally not prescriptive on the presentation of tax uncertainties. Effectively refer to IS-1. The paragraph to which you refer on IS-1 is a list. It's not a definitive closed list. You can add lines. You can probably also consider the fact that are explicitly mentioned current deferred taxes current deferred tax assets and liabilities. And there, on I think it's paragraph 88 of IS-1, is referred to IS-12 in this instance. The same for deferred tax assets and liabilities. But for provisions, the line provisions does not refer to anything, to any standard at all, which to me makes it consistent with paragraph 5b of IS-37. And then, obviously, in this paragraph, there is no mention at all, no explicit mention of the way to present tax uncertainty. So what I'm just saying is I think that if we were to reach a conclusion, the conclusion that is expressed in the agenda decision, the only way of in doing so is to amend paragraph 5 of IS-37, is to amend paragraph 88, I think, of IS-1 at a minimum. So we cannot issue in this instance an agenda decision. We can only do standard setting. And so I think the answer provided by the committee goes far beyond what is possible in terms of the way that the standards are currently written. And just this agenda paper 10 echoes to agenda paper 8. We decided in agenda paper 8 that IFRS 16 was not explicit in terms of the way to compute an incremental borrowing rate, and therefore we did not prescribe anything explicit, and I don't see where here the standards are more explicit than the issue that was dealt with in agenda paper 8. So really, I think we should go for standard setting should we wish to present tax uncertainty outside of the provision line. But otherwise, there is nothing explicit enough in the standards and prescriptive enough in the standards to derive this conclusion.
At the risk of having no friends left by the end of this meeting.
Sorry?
At the risk of having no friends left by the end of this meeting. Can I ask you a question, Bertrand? Because
sure.
I find it, setting aside the specifics of IS-1 just for a second,
yes.
And focusing on the interaction between IFRIC 23 and IS-12. I find it hard to get past the scope paragraph, which says that when you've got uncertain income tax treatments, an entity shall recognise and measure its current or deferred tax, applying the requirements in IS-12, applying this interpretation.
Yeah, sure. Recognition and measurement.
But then
no
it
problem.
Becomes part of the
We're not talking
and
about
tax.
Recognition in terms of. So, what I understand is recognition principle and measurement principle. I have no problem with that. There, we are talking about a presentation matter in the balance sheet, which is totally different.
But I think
My first question is, because IFRIC 23 tells me to recognize and measure the amounts in IS-12 using this interpretation, once I've decided that it's incorporated in the measurement, doesn't it follow naturally that when I get to IAS-12, the references to current and deferred tax must be including the amounts that have come in because of applying IAS-23? And that in turn, where we talk about amounts and other standards that refer to the definitions in IAS-12, 23 has had an effect that flows through everything, which I think is what Bruce was saying.
Yeah, but this is an interpretation of the interpretation. It is not stated explicitly.
But how do you read the scope paragraph in IFRIC 23 in any other way? I guess that's my first question.
Current and deferred tax.
So, if I may, this interpretation clarifies how to apply the recognition and measurement requirements in IS 12 when there is uncertainty. So, to me, that's applying the recognition and measurement, not saying the definition of a tax payable now encompasses an uncertainty. The uncertainty is something different than a tax payable or tax receivable. So, to me, it doesn't naturally follow that it is the definition. Therefore, when you look at IS 1, it's not clear to me that it's a tax payable or receivable. And IAS 1 is not definitive or prescriptive, and therefore I look at the nature of what it is to understand how I present it in the balance sheet and in the footnotes. And to me, the uncertainty of the position itself, because it's not a current tax payable, in fact, most of them are probably non-current, then it doesn't naturally follow to me.
I would answer the same. I mean, I don't derive any specific presentation conclusion from what is stated in the paragraph you listed.
And
you apply IFRIC 23 on tax uncertainties to, obviously, income tax issues, so deferred tax assets and liabilities and current tax assets and liabilities, obviously, because it's what is explicitly stated in IS 12. But I don't derive any conclusion in terms of presenting those tax uncertainties in the balance sheet from this paragraph, for sure.
And I'm not saying 23 per se sets out presentation requirements. I'm just saying that the way I read the scope paragraphs is it's telling you when you get to 12 and you're looking at what these tax amounts are, the amounts they're talking about were determined using 23.
For me, this paragraph was more to say you don't apply that to levies, for instance.
No.
Because some auditors in France, I heard some auditors saying that you could apply that to something else than income taxes. IFRIC 23, the principle contained in IFRIC 23, could be used to deal with uncertainties on value-added tax, on levies, on whatever. So this paragraph is just saying, no, it's just referring to IS 12. So income taxes and not levies. Not the levies mentioned in IFRIC 21, not value-added taxes, not whatever.
Other indirect taxes.
Okay. Let others come in. Carsten?
Yeah, I guess I'm more in the camp of where the staff has gotten to, and also along the lines of Bruce on this one. I think the key question really is, do uncertain tax liabilities meet the definition of an income tax in IS 12. So I think that's really the question at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have determined that that's the case, I think IS 1 requires you to present them separately. Now I agree that, of course, you don't necessarily need to show them in the line item that IS 1 requires, because IS 1 also allows you to present separate line items. But you must be able, I think, to identify the total amount of your IS 12 tax liabilities. So you could present them, I guess, separately, as long as it's clear that these are IS 12 tax liabilities. So personally, I don't really see how you can get out of the tax liability definition. That's what I'm struggling with. And so I'm more in the camp, Bruce, and where the stuff has gotten to.
Lisa.
Yeah, and I would say that I agree with the staff paper and with the camp of Kirsten and Bruce to the same, is that once you meet the definition of an income tax and you're in IS 12, then by default you have to report it in the tax expense line. It's just an estimate of that amount. And whether or not, yes, you may maybe make the argument you want to distinguish the difference between what's the estimate versus the actual tax liability, but it has to be reported in the tax line. And I guess the other bit...
Or in the cash flow statement, it's the case. I dispute this conclusion for the balance sheet presentation. Obviously, in the P&L, it's in an income tax line item. Obviously, I mean, the income tax expense or income, it depends, is composed of current taxes, deferred taxes, and tax uncertainties, so provisions, for sure. P&L, cash flow statements, notes to the financial statements, it's all dealt with within income taxes. What we are disputing with Bonnie probably is the classification in the balance sheet because those tax uncertainties have a very specific nature, which has nothing to do with a current tax liability, which has nothing to do with a deferred tax liability. It's something else.
But it's your estimate. It's your estimate of your current. I mean, it's an uncertainty, but it's an estimate of what your current and your deferred tax liability is. So therefore, it should go on the balance sheet.
It's a liability of an uncertain nature.
It's your best estimate. It's your best estimate, just like any other.
It's not a liability per se.
It's an estimate of your liability at the balance sheet date.
Mary, do you want to come in, or are you going to wait?
Let me not stand before Jake.
I think his tag was up first.
You're just nervous because you're sitting next to Bertrand.
I grease the wheels on the chair so I can roll.
She's within reach.
Jake.
I think I'm on Bruce's island, and I'm not sure how big this island is. As I read the requirements of the standard, you've got IS1 that says, right, you've got to present liabilities and assets for current tax. Now, that, to me, reads straight across to paragraph 46 in IS12, which is all about how you measure current tax liabilities, and all IFRIC 23 does is tell you how to interpret that in the context of uncertain tax position. So I think the reading of the standards is very clear.
Guy?
I, too, agree with the staff analysis of this. I can understand, I think, what Bertrand is saying with regard to the paragraph in IS 37. However, I just don't think I can overcome fact that I'm measuring current and deferred tax under IFRIC 23, even though it's uncertain, and then I have explicit requirements in IS 1 to present current and deferred tax separately. And one other observation that comes to mind as I listen to the discussion, it just strikes me as rather strange that I would have something that relates to, say, deferred tax presented as part of provisions. Like this is about amounts related to income tax. And so maybe I could, there may be a little more logic to the notion of current tax, but to think of presenting recognition and measurement of uncertain deferred tax amounts as part of provisions, I really start to struggle with that. But that's more just a layperson reaction. But I think the requirements of IS 12, IFRIC 23, and IS 1, when taken together, make the answer quite clear, at least to me, and consistent with the way the staff has analyzed it. So I'm in favor of finalizing the agenda decision.
Jim?
I couldn't help to notice that all of a sudden, all the preparers are getting up together to go against this, right? From Bonnie to Bertrand, Carl, and myself.
Lisa,
not me, yeah.
Think a little more.
The
bank. Think so back. She's coming from the bank.
She's extra special.
I couldn't say it's wrong the way the staff is doing the analysis, like Sue mentioned and others. The rules are pretty much clear. But the thing is, why we're not following the logic? I don't know when or whom the board members are creating these wordings. Notice that these wording, the unintended consequences are too severe. It gives the companies unfair disadvantages over certain authorities that we could not even have a plan table to bargain against. So it's not an accounting issue. So it's almost going against giving up on your kind of a secret, trying to be a good accountant, but giving away some critical hint or information toward some authority that I couldn't even dare to mention the name. Some disadvantage over our own company. That's my way to look at it. So is there any way to just, I think some of us mentioned, to change this wording, of course, we'll give it to the board, so that the companies or the preparers or the good accountants trying very hard to identify the potential liability without giving away the secret or the unfairness of on the table. So I cannot find a technical way to read through the existing wording to avoid the result like is presented on the paper. But it's the truth. The reality is some authority will take this line item and use it going against some of us unfairly. So that's the dilemma. I am not saying this wrong or technically I agree with this analysis, but we have to face the reality. I think you will barely see the very reasonable certain authority representatives who say, oh, that's your fair judgment. We'll put it aside. It's hard. Yeah, I just think about the reality where we're living in right now. Sorry.
You'd be asking us to go to the board and asking them to do standard setting to reduce transparency.
Not exactly transparency. It's a kind of a... No. I would like to call it unfair disclosure.
Could you come in now, Mary?
Yeah, I hadn't wanted to cut in line in front of Jake before, but, as I have thought about the discussion, clearly reading the comment letters that... I knew that we'd have a range of views at the table today. That I don't have a problem with trying to flag that there is uncertainty related to this additional liability amount. In the description of it, flagging that there is somehow uncertainty associated with it. And I have to, when I look at IFRIC 23, Jake. Thankfully, has it open to the right page. It says uncertainty over income tax treatments. So it's not the incorporation of the word uncertainty in a line item that is the problem to me. So to the extent that that's what people are trying to address, that's not a problem. I think the things that are problems is anything that signals that changes in the amount of this liability are not income tax expense. Because it's clear that the change in the balance is income tax expense. It's not provision. It's not financing. It's not SG&A. That's one. Two is I don't see a way that we can say it's fine to aggregate it with provisions under that generic title on the face of the balance sheet. And the reason I say I can't see a way to say it's fine, even if we said it was a provision for uncertain tax liabilities. Because all the other provisions are measured on a different basis, i.e. they are discounted. And this one is not. And so combining, one, especially if the only reason it's being combined is to reduce transparency, and that reduced transparency is bad from a public policy perspective, but more importantly, it's bad from a user perspective in terms of understanding that. So to the extent that the concerns we're hearing are around characterizing it on the balance sheet as if it were a certain amount, yes, address that with the label that's attached to it and the disaggregation. So if somebody said, I don't know, I'm going out on my own here, and this may not be legit, but provision for income tax uncertainty, I think I could deal with that. What I can't deal with is burying it in provisions for both the implication for tax expense, for the implication for transparency, and that's where I see real tension with the requirements of IFRIC 23, with the requirements of IS 12, and also with the overall requirements of IS 1. So that's trying to parse some of the concerns I've had, and if the concerns are that it's basically an admission of guilt to call it a liability for additional taxes. If the characterization as uncertainty helps, then introduce that, because I think that's qualitative information about the amount that's been accrued.
You could have further disaggregation within the income tax item.
Yeah.
Carl?
I think the problem is not the search for less transparency, but the problem is not the best way to portray it as current.
tax liability as well. Yeah. That's the problem. That's the real problem. So if it, the best way is not to to call it a provision, to me it's also it's not the best way to call it a current tax liability. And again, it was not part of the discussion during the development of the FRIC 23. So a couple of years later, we are facing an implementation problem, and which can brings a lot of complicated consequences. And it's not fair to address through agenda decisions something that was apparently not intended. It was not part of the discussion.
You mean in IFRIC 23?
It's a new discussion.
Yeah.
In IFRIC 23, you mean?
Yeah.
Clearly an unintended consequence.
All right.
Oh, yes. You know, I'm not a technical expert, but the from user's point of view, that the staff analysis is convincing enough. And also that I wonder if that, clearly, there is a portion which is more certain, and also the uncertain in the tax position. From user's point of view, that to know that how much is it uncertain in that this tax position would be very relevant. Therefore, although this agenda decision are only mentioning about the presentation, but from a user's point of view, if we can know this uncertain position in the notes, that would be relevant enough. And also, this disclosure in notes by preparers about an uncertain amount could be a possible, the possible something positive, a possible measure to counter that the dispute with the tax authority.
Thank you. Young Su?
While I'm listening to everybody, I was trying to think of what was the basic underlying logic that we used when we developed IFRIC 23. If my recollection is right, what we did was that, was define that uncertain tax, even if it has some kind of uncertainties and should be estimated, uncertain tax is a part of tax, not a provision. So if that was the basic logic of IFRIC 23, I think presentation also should follow the same logic. So, if we, by following IFRIC 23, we have to, I think, say the presentation should also follow IAS 12 and IAS 1. So, I support this decision as drafted.
Thank you. Bonnie, were you next?
Yeah, I want to be clear. I'm not advocating for less transparency. What my biggest problem is that there is diversity in practice because there have been some preparers who have changed. There's diversity in practice because there's three preparers that are sitting here saying it's not clear. And finalizing the agenda decision, I think, has the... We're basically setting standards without setting a standard through an agenda decision. And to me, that's not the purpose of the agenda decision.
That's the case if the committee thinks that it's not that adequate information in the standards to reach a decision.
Yeah. So the requirements provide an adequate basis for the body of standards.
Which wasn't the assessment last time. Mikhail?
I normally always think that this should be flexible for the preparers, so to speak, to interpret the principles. But I must say that in this case, I think this is taxes. I mean, if we present this as taxes in the income statement and we present this as taxes in the cash flow statement, I think the only logical is to also present this as taxes in the balance sheet. And I think that this is logical consequence of the interpretation that we did. And I mean, I also think that that interpretation was the right thing to do, but we all, I think, from the preparer side, know that that was a lot of discussions in our tax departments and so on, that we were putting ourselves in a more difficult position. But still, I support the proposal or the agenda decision.
Thank you. Bertrand?
Like Bonnie, we are not seeking for necessarily less transparency. What we are seeking for is, I mean, I have British colleagues that used to say, it barks, it waves its tail, it's not a cat. So in this, to apply these principles there, to apply this principle here, it means that, I mean, it's not an agenda decision because it's not explicit. There is nothing mentioned nowhere in any standards to prescribe the accounting for tax uncertainties in the balance sheet. So hence, it can't be an agenda decision. It needs to be standard setting. So we are just, effectively, I do agree with Bonnie, we are just calling for a standard setting in this regard. I mean, if I had known, honestly, like Carl said, if I had known that, because IFRIC 23, I was arriving at this committee when it was issued, if I had known that it had embarked presentation, without explicitly mentioning presentation, I would have dissented, for sure. Okay. So it was, it's really something new, and it's not explicit. IS 37, paragraph 5, mentioned provisions for income taxes. So we're not saying that it's not income taxes. I'm not saying that it's not income taxes. To answer you, Mary, as I mentioned earlier to Lisa, it's income taxes. It's in a line income taxes in the P&L. It's in a line income taxes in the cash flow statement. It's in the notes to the financial statements within income taxes. So it's income taxes. What we're just saying is that, effectively, it's not a current tax liability. It's not a deferred tax liability. It's something else. So, effectively, it is embarked within those provisions for income taxes, as it is mentioned in paragraph 5 of IS 37. Hence, effectively, it's within the provision line item in the balance sheet, which is disaggregated in the notes to the financial statements. And then, effectively, to echo Carl, the level of disaggregation for tax litigations, notably, or tax uncertainties depends on the level of trust we can have on the legal environment we're involved in. I mean, we are a French company paying taxes in France, and we disclose all our tax litigations. I mean, in France, we have no, because we trust the legal environment. There are other jurisdictions, maybe we wouldn't do that. And I think that's what Jim and Carl mentioned earlier. So we're not calling for more or less transparency. We're just saying that in the boundaries of the current standards, the answer is not explicit.
Mary, do you want the last word before we call a vote?
Well, I do, in part to Bonnie's concern about, shared by Bertrand, about its standard setting, because it's going to change practice. And that observation is that I think very often we hope and expect that the expanded discussion that's included in an agenda decision, when we have noted that there is diversity in practice, will cause people to think about their practice and maybe make some changes. So the fact that we might expect changes as a consequence does not, to me, say, therefore, it must automatically be standard setting, because I think the caution that both of you have expressed about thinking, as we did with agenda paper, let me get my numbers right, 8, about whether or not we're going beyond the bounds of what's in the document, it is the right kind of process challenge to raise. But I think saying, because we know it will require or encourage people to think about changing practice, to me is that's the upside of agenda decisions in terms of driving improved consistency in the application. So I'm just trying to make that distinction, and with you guys saying, do you think there is a basis in the standards and in the analysis of the standards for reaching a conclusion on this point? And, you know, when after I made my previous intervention asking if the question is a concern about characterizing it on the face of the statement of financial position as if it were a certain amount. I mean, and frankly, most deferred taxes are estimates, not certain amounts to begin with. If, you know, if the critical point is including something in the name that makes it clear that it is for uncertain tax amounts, I don't think that's a I don't know, I'm looking over at the staff. They're nodding their head. I think it's in agreement with me that putting characterization on the line item is not the problem. I think where you start to get into problems is aggregating it with provisions, because I think that does start to raise some qualitative materiality concerns, even if you are intending to disaggregate it in the notes. But I guess just asking you, when you're thinking about whether or not you can reach a decision on this, to think about how much there is in the standards. And, you know, Bertrand, to your, if it wags its tail and it barks, it's not a cat. If it's the amount that's recognized as a result of applying an interpretation that says this is guidance on how you measure your income tax, obligations, and I'm paraphrasing there rather than reading, is it really appropriate to essentially label it other provisions as opposed to other income tax liabilities that may be uncertain? Is that trying to make something that's wagging its tail and barking also meow? Is that the right thing?
So, Mary, I just want to clarify. Yeah. My point on diversity was to illustrate that it's not clear in the standards. Mm. Not that it's going to change practice, because that's not the point that I was trying to make.
Okay.
There are all sorts of agenda decisions that we have concluded on that does, in fact, change practice, and that's not the issue. Mm-hmm. The issue is I don't believe it's clear.
Okay. All right.
To me, that's borne out in the diversity.
Okay, so let's try and vote on this. So before we issued the tentative agenda decision, the committee voted on the view at the time that standard setting wasn't required, so we went out with the tentative agenda decision. Staff's proposal is that we now move forward to finalise the agenda decision as set out in here. Implicit in that is the view of the committee that we think that there is adequate guidance in the standards for the basis of preparing financials. And with that, can I get a show of hands from the committee on who agrees with finalising the agenda decision as set out on pages 14 to 16?
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
10. Okay.